You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahi ahi mari e, tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toka ingoa.
Ko Sophia toku ingoa, nau mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. How are you, mea?
I'm great, how are you? I'm glad that the sun is shining.
Sun is shining, honestly, after yesterday, foul.
I know, so foul. I was in so many rain jackets and my umbrella kept on like falling over
but
and
like
going everywhere.
Raincoat chic.
Yes, raincoat chic and some boots and my scarf.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about outfits. If I can name coming up on the show today, Maya, what have you got?
I had a kōrero with Ada C. Rong, and I also had a kōrero with Karen Montgomery.
And I had a kōrero with curator and director of public record, Yuka Oshinesi, and director of the Arts House Trust, Anita Tota, about Ma Yuka's guest show, which opened last week. I also had a kōrero with artist Peter Robinson about his show on at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery with Italian painter Giorgio Griffa, Differences in Kind and Rhythm.
He aha o whakaro, we would love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tuku patsahi mai, you can text us on 5395-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5-5
Also, after the show, koa e wareware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō hei pakihiri rokiroki maronga i te pai tokutoku o Irirangi Poho, me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Let's get into the show.
Oh, that's a good art!
Ma is a new exhibition curated by Yuka Oshinesi on at the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead. Ma is often translated to mean gap, space or interval, referring to a space that creates harmony between elements. With a background rooted in her upbringing in Japan and exploration of artistic mediums and making, including her pursuit of fashion studies, Yuka has a refined, distinct and thoughtful aesthetic as the director of Public Record. Exploring space, connection, and transformation, her exhibition Ma traverses the Japanese concept with a series of intentional pauses, moments of tension, openness, and calm that invite reflection and connection within an environment. Showcasing the works of 28 artists as sourced from the Arts House Trust collection, as well as Public Records and other selected artists, this exhibition presents a considered curation, presentation, and appreciation of craftsmanship and refined and unique visual expression. I had a kōrero with Yuka Oshinesi, as well as director of the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead, Anita Tota, about the show.
At the Arts House Trust, we always think about, you know, how can we can support the arts and culture sector here in Aotearoa? And we think about, you know, who we support, how we support, especially in these times of economic austerity and, you know, quite a dire arts and culture scene. And I thought about, you know, we help several artists and we have several exhibitions throughout the year that the Arts House Trust runs at the Pa Homestead. But I noticed there wasn't enough opportunities for curators. Yuka came to my mind immediately when I started to think about this. Yuka has, you know, a strong following. She has an incredible gallery, Public Record, on Ponsonby Road. Her aesthetic is so unique to Aotearoa and, you know, from an Eastern perspective and just in general, supporting craft object jewelry. I guess pulling that all together, bringing that to the Arts House Trust is what I was interested in. We have about 10,000 artworks in the collection. You know, most of that isn't seen on a daily basis. And like many museums and galleries around the world, there are storage issues as well. So we asked Yuka to respond as guest curator and use about 60 or 70% of our collection and bring that perspective and I guess, bring in others as well from Public Record and from galleries like Michaelette and FHE to form an incredible exhibition. And there's some works, I've only been in the role for about 18 months, so there's some works that I didn't even know we had. I'm still trying to learn, have an encyclopedic knowledge about the collection. But there's an incredible Peter Robinson that Yuka, for example, you know, she dug through our archives and just pulled these things out. And in fact, at the opening last week, people were absolutely floored to see some of these works. They haven't seen them in decades. So there's Bronwyn Cornish, there's Bill Hammond, Peter Robinson, as I mentioned, a stunning Milan Mrkosic, and several other artists, which Yuka can talk about as well, that just brought an incredible atmosphere and a different context to the exhibition and to the artworks.
Totally. Yuka, we'll pass to you. Tell me a bit about your background. You're the director of Public Record, but you've also got quite a multidisciplinary background in the arts and beyond. You've studied fashion as well and been really involved in that too. Tell me a bit about that and the experiences or interests that have informed your creative vision as a curator.
Well, yes, I was born in Tokyo and raised there and spent there until early 20s. Until I leave there, I didn't notice it was my daily things, but I was so accessible to this incredible city that it was normal for me, my sort of neighborhood. So the any spare time, I spent time going to museums, and that was very... that was normal for me. And coming here, before coming here, I was actually a professional runner.
Oh, really? No way.
I held a national record.
What? That's so cool.
And yeah, that's my party trick. under 20, actually. So I was a half marathon, long distance. So my career, I believed I was once dreamed about going to Olympics. I was belong to a strong team, and then my colleague all went to Olympics, and then a top runner. So quite different upbringing from even normal Japanese people. I had a big injury, so I have to stop my career, and then about early 20s. And I was thinking about future. I've always interested in fashion and art and beautiful things. Since I'm going to international games, I knew meet a lot of athletes who speak English to communicate. So I thought this is important. Important for me to master the language to communicate a lot of different type of people. And I had best friends here in New Zealand, so I came. That was a very easy choice, and to spend time with her, I really enjoyed it. But came to New Zealand 20 years ago, didn't really have much things available. But that probably drives me what I can do here. I study fashion to grounded in New Zealand what I could do here, which I was interested in. And my mentor, people that I worked in the fashion industry was Christine Krav.
Oh my God, icon.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to work across with her, looking at what she does. But she's actually same age as me. I had the children same time.
Right.
So one of my inspirational woman of all time. Now I've actually jumping into New Zealand, some new field. I didn't have much connection to it, but I met my husband. He's a New Zealander. He helped me guide through, and also Christine and all of my uni teacher was give me sort of fundamental connection, and I really appreciate that. To start my career here, I felt really sustainable and very helpful. So now I've been sort of away from my own creativity, but having that gallery, I kind of felt now time to sort of put my love into my community. That's how I started gallery, and then that probably reflected my curations.
Totally. I wanted to, obviously we're here to talk about Ma, and to kind of start our kōrero about this exhibition. Would you like to firstly elaborate on this concept of ma and what that means and why that has centered your curatorial vision of this exhibition?
So, ma is sort of a lot of design or architectural thesis or study base being used actually internationally. Ma translate like a gap space interval, but it refers to the harmonious things between elements, and then feeling as well, or the object between thanks to Anita, just incredible opportunity for working with people like Anita and the Art House Trust. They had incredible collection archives that I could access to. So was actually, firstly, about 8 to 10 months ago, she asked me first time to do guest curator. And then that kind of a little bit, I was excited, but also overwhelmed at the same time, and how I can bring a strong exhibition, also bring the essence of public record and me myself into this show. And in thinking and exploring idea of what's how I can do a very impact exhibition. And I actually took a long break during summertime and went to Japan. And with my family, I was traveling around, and one of my elder, I have two daughters, 16 and 18. My elder one studying at the Auckland Uni for architecture. So we knew this would be our last trip for us to have a big trip. And we're visiting lots of museum and architectural landmarks for her and for us. And then visited islands. Few times we've been, but for first time for my children. And the experience of my favorite galleries over there, Chichu, it's have Monet in the room, or the Teshima, they have Ryue Nishizawa has designed for the artist who does installation of water, using a water fountain. It's very serene, quiet environment that you go walk in, and it has to be silent. And then you are ultimately surrounded by the very serene, amazing energy there. And you just wanted to stop and then take it in. So when I had a moment, I was sat onto the, my favorite walk around in a favorite spot, looking at people walked, come and go. And then even people walk around them become a part of art. And then I just felt like evoking my feeling and almost like crying. And then I kind of have this moment, phenomenal experiences. I sometimes have when I go to temple, seeing the beautiful garden. If I pick one that's like a Ryuanji, there's a beautiful temple called Ryuanji in Kyoto. They have a famous stone rock garden there. And I see a lot of people sitting on the veranda, like on the corridor, on the Japanese temple, looking at the garden for a long time. That kind of the movement I would like to create to this exhibition. So not much to talk about, not necessarily to talk about the, how I want to try to do it, but kind of a natural phenomenon that, that would have happened. If I could really display that beautiful artwork in the air and creating a beautiful atmosphere.
Beautiful. I wanted to talk about like selecting works. This exhibition is made up of works from the Arts House Trust collection, as well as public record and other selected artists. When looking at that process, was this a process of you selecting works and finding a common thread between them, or was it kind of starting with a theme or vision and then selecting accordingly?
I would say this is probably a bit of both. So I could access to this incredible archives of Art House Trust and then getting through, but I have to tune myself into the selection and then concept. So I going back and forth, the selection of I did for the show is make sure to fit into this concept. And also I was so unfamiliar with the the buildings and location as well. So I visited a few times, and then just to understand the context of the building. And I also, the Nicholas, the vice director, helped me to go through this collection that I initially made, and then checking the condition of art, or some art I never seen in person. I know that visually never sort of justified by seeing the catalogue. So that was a really nice and fortunate, that grateful for me to be able to do this collaboration between the gallery and that. And yeah. So I would say maybe a bit of both, back and forth.
Totally. And there are so many artists featured in this show, 28, I believe I counted. Unfortunately, we can't speak for all, but were there any artists or works that kind of grounded your ideas for this exhibition particularly?
Yeah, so I think it is hard to pick one. I think those people that I selected was all-time my favourites.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, access to Peter Robinson's old painting and Bill Hammond's. I actually made a fashion collection one time dedicated to his painting. So, like, yeah, I was just like my hero. And also to Bronwyn Cornish, the figurative earthenware sculptures. And yeah, I was very enjoy this process. But for the artist talk, and then for the concept, when I was lighting, academic lighting, I knew I have to pick a couple artists to explain, giving information of what is a ma, but trying to give in too much. And I picked the Zach London Paul. He's represented by Michael Lett. I've the Teach Kintsugi workshop through my businesses for culture exchange, and his use of materiality for his art form has been influenced by, I can see that heavily influenced by this philosophy of wabi-sabi. He's trying to put two different elements, East and West, old and new, and then filling the gap by different materials, and to feel the illusion of time, end time. That's similar, same concept with kintsugi, beautiful ancient art form from Japan. And also Sibila, who's one of the room that heavily I've been showcasing her work, her ongoing study by materiality and the nature, which giving sort of the information of time has changing. She's capturing it really well with the Japanese paper. And the using natural elements is something that resonates to what I love about art and craft. So those two are pretty much probably making a core for this show. But however, I would say I think this ma has to be something that people go through, understanding my vision, which created by how to display the artwork. So I often play around with lighting. And so the three rooms there that if you walk through, you can go like dark room to warm room, color, wall color that I selected to create some atmosphere, the warmness. And then the last room is white wall, that sort of serene and crisp, with the natural elements or artwork is in there, that hopefully that evoke people's feeling. And also, like, there was a sort of angle that I have a favorite spot to stand in each room, that to see that some art is becoming coincide or speak to each other.
Right.
Yeah, so that's all about the balancing.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe. It's just me having those things that,
No, because I did want to talk to you about the kind of different rooms and whether, like, the thought behind that, which you've touched on there really beautifully. I guess to kind of end our kōrero, what was it like for you going from working in a space that was a lot smaller, like Public Record, to working in a big space, like working throughout the ground floor galleries at Pa Homestead?
Yes, I think it's not about the space is getting bigger. I'm quite capable to work with different concept and go different space. I realize, yeah, I've done the sidewalk work and I really enjoy that too. However, but this time that building was heritage building and owned by council. That was definitely challenging for me because I'm thinking about to evoke people's feeling. I had different ideas to creating a meditation room, for example. But then actually that was rejected because of the safety, and then actually quite incredible archives they have. And then many, I was surprised being through their gallery, so many people are there, enjoy the art, and then the beautiful cafes there and the beautiful stunning location overlooking the Auckland city. So I realized that I have to design a work that's safe, like, you know, for fits to the regulation and to safety to everyone. So that kind of things are very new to me. So yeah, I actually designed three or four shows within that 6 months to be able to fits to that building.
Yuka has also worked with our team to offer a few public programs, one of them being a kintsugi workshop that will be on August 6th. That's for all ages. And then there'll be a few other public programs, so feel free to check our website. And the exhibition is on until the 31st of August. So I invite everyone to come visit.
That was curator Yuka O'Shaughnessy, as well as director of the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead, Anita Tota, speaking to me about Ma, an exhibition on now until the 31st of August.
Furious artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
We'll be right on back after the short break. Talk soon.
Dive into pools of textual colour at a Century of Modern Art exhibition at Auckland Art Gallery, Toi o Tamaki, on now until September 28th.
Witness Van Gogh's emotive brushstrokes, Monet's evocative landscapes, Rauschenberg's bold abstractions, and many more works that revolutionised Western art history and continue to inspire new generations.
Become a member and get free, unlimited entry to this dazzling exhibition, as well as members' lounge access, invitations to exclusive events, discounts and more. Find out more at AucklandArtGallery.com.
Witness living art at Basement Theatre this winter season. Happening now, expect a blistering lineup with a brand new show opening every week, including works from an incredible array of daring, hilarious, and innovative theatre makers.
Soak up the sweat, tears, and blood of the performers.
Not real blood, though.
You'll have to decide for yourself. It's theatre!
Stoke your winter fires at Basement Theatre. For the full program and tickets, head to basementtheatre.co.nz.
I just want to say how proud we are. I remember when you were just water, malt, hops, and yeast. They just brew up so fast.
Holy heck! Hallertau's turning 20! To celebrate, the Barons of Beer are throwing a huge family-friendly party on Sunday, July 20th, and a barnstorming adults-only shindig on Saturday, July 26th.
Plus, from July 1st, Hallertau will be announcing a new giveaway every day for 20 days.
Head to hallertau.co.nz or follow Hallertau's socials for details.
Do you growl towards the weekend on a Friday afternoon like the cockroach that hides in the corner of your room and crawls towards your sleeping face at night to slither inside your ear and lay its eggs?
Well, it's lucky we have this show to jolt you awake and stop all that disgusting crawling.
It's the Friday 2 to 4 with a brain-birthing cast of DJs ready to get you hyped for the weekend.
The original originator.
95. Go to 95bfm.com for show podcasts.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
Memoration is a solo exhibition by multidisciplinary artist Si Rong. Within Memoration, Si Rong presents a body of work that hovers between the everyday life and the imagined dreamlike space, navigating humanity's relationship with home and the things inside them. Her paintings sing with sweeping colours and dance amongst familiar forms, while pulling viewers into a world of the paintings themselves that bring to you a feeling of home and into a space of community. Mobile-like structures hang alongside the paintings, playing a careful balancing act of the movements of starlings. Memoration. Si Rong, uses murmuration as a metaphor for community, shifting the gallery space into a place of murmuration itself, bringing us into a space of warmth when we need it most. I had a chat with Sirong about murmuration as well as the overall practice. Here it is now.
My name is Sirong and I graduate from Elam in 2021. And I am a multidisciplinary artist working with a variety of media. And my work generally revolves around daily life. So each exhibition responds to my living environment. I navigate and kind of digest my life experience and translate them into the art reflect to my personal and artistic perspective. And so the media I use depends on the theme. So recently my shows have featured mainly oil paintings and the mixed media installation. But I also work with objects, video and portrait before in the past.
Within your current show, Murmuration, you delve into these areas of the everyday life, dreams and this relationship between humanity and things. Could you tell me a bit more about how this particular body of work arose? Was there a central idea or path of navigation that you were specifically drawn to explore through this project?
This body of work actually starts from a project that I made during COVID lockdown. And it's also my second year master. And back in that time, I feel like we are all kind of been sent back to our own little islands, so just ourselves and our home. And that really made me think about the relationship between things around us, especially in those confined space. And when everything slows down, our connection to everyday objects become more personal. And in that way of thinking, kind of linked to my current show, Murmuration. So for me, Murmuration is a beautiful movement of birds that flying together in a big group. And it become a metaphor for how I see the society right now. So I start thinking maybe we are kind of like just one bird in that massive fold and trying to figure out where we fit. We each have our own direction to go, but we still have to move with the group or at least stay aware of that we are in this group. And there's always is this content inference happening between us. So even we are trying to stay independent, we still absorb the collective energy and almost like feels like we're sharing that unconscious without realizing in sometimes. So we always adjusting ourselves and always rebalancing ourselves. And that feeling constantly shifting to stay in balance. And in sometimes I really want to, and in something, I mean that's what I really want to capture in my work.
Your paintings hover in the space between the everyday life and the imagined dreamlike space, singing with sweeping colours and dancing amongst familiar forms while pulling the viewer into a world of the paintings themselves. Could you speak to your use of imagery within the paintings, as well as what your creative process looks like in the making of these paintings?
My paintings usually start with background colour. And normally put lots of layers on it. And this time at the big painting, I make my own gesso so you can see a little crack on it. And then when the canvas dry, I will spend time kind of just gazing at the canvas and then see what I see from the background color. And I will begin to translate those vision and image into concrete forms on the canvas.
Beautiful. So do you not know what you're going to paint when you start it, or do you kind of like start the painting and look at it and kind of gain an idea of it through the process of it?
Yeah, so I do that through the process. I never do the sketching. It started.
Mm.
so it always changing during the painting, you know, while I'm painting. So I constantly modify and add the details to make the image in my mind that come through more fully on the canvas. And I hope those people who view my work can feel the same emotion and the atmosphere that I experience while creating it. The title Murmuration is a group of birds, and I feel like we're flying, kind of like we don't know where the birds go. And it's also like what I feel like flying to find a home, but you don't know where really it is. For me, that New Zealand's a country that people immigrate and then try to find a place to stay, to continue to be here. And it's also another layer of meaning behind the house and home.
Mm. And also included in the show, we see these mobile-like structures. Could you tell me a bit more about these and the kind of relationships that they have with your paintings?
So the idea of this, my mobiles, is come from how birds have to keep their balance all the time when they're flying. So I made this light, but still slightly weight organic shapes by the air-dry clay. And I dye the color, and then I put them on the marbles, try to find that balance so that keep moving. The feeling of that marbles keep moving, it's kind of like birds that they fly in the murmuration.
Mm. And what are your hopes for viewers as they navigate the show? Are there any questions or feelings that you wish for them to bump up against?
So I hope people come to see the show. They can feeling happy while they're there and maybe think about a few things. I've also sometimes that artwork is, I want art is for people to have a break. So I hope everyone who's seen the work can find something kind of drawing of themselves. So I also like how they can get some more ideas while they're seeing the work, but maybe not really give them the answer through my show. It's more like sharing the feeling.
That was artist C. Rong speaking to me about her show currently on at Sanderson, Murmuration, on until the 20th of July.
Various artists.
We've now got some Julia Jacklin for you, one of my absolute favourites. This is I Was Neon.
I could see it all, so
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Difference in Kind and Rhythm is the second in a series of dialogue exhibitions made at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery since 2024, for which artists from Aotearoa appeared with international artists. Curated by James Gatt, this exhibition pairs the work of senior multidisciplinary artist Peter Robinson and Italian painter Giorgio Griffa, eliciting a considered and cross-cultural conversation between the works and their respective practices. Together, the paintings by Griffa and sculptural forms by Robinson have shared qualities of repeated forms and movements that respond to related concepts of repetition and difference, emergence and continuum. Common threads can be seen within the works through the complex, lyrical, the sharp and soft, illustrating subtle distinctions between similar forms and difference in expression. I had a kōrero with Peter Robinson about the making of Differences in Kind and Rhythm. So Difference in Kind and Rhythm is the second in a series of dialogue exhibitions at Te Uru. How did the show kind of come about? Was it a curatorial pairing by James Gatt or more of an artist-led pairing?
No, it was a curatorial pairing. I'd worked with James Gatt in Sydney in a show called Sculpture Salon at Sarah Cotier Gallery probably about 10 years or so ago. So he was familiar with my work, and I think he just saw a relationship between me and Griffa.
So. He did really well with that. I feel like the show looks so beautiful, and I think it's such a great pairing. But I'm interested to know in how this show kind of unfolded between an artist from Aotearoa and one from Italy. Your new work responds to the more historical work of Griffa's, and I was wondering if this was like more of a collaborative process as part of like a conversation with the artist, or was it a response purely to the work itself?
I think it was really James Gatt's response to both works and him seeing connections and relationships between the two. Of course, my work has an origin in Arte Povera, which is an Italian art movement, and Griffa emerged as an artist during that period. So although Griffa is a painter and I'm a sculptor, there are interlinkages between the work.
Definitely. And yeah, as you say, like, there are really strong interlinks, and the two of you have quite a unique approach to exploring these ideas of like patterns and shape and form through repetitive gestures. How have you experimented with shape and form in this show, and what kind of key ideas underline this process of making?
In my response to the last question, I sort of missed out something. I was aware of Griffa's work about 15 years ago. There was a catalogue of his work in ArtSpace, and I was very taken by the work. And I was interested in seeing if I could make a sculptural response to his work. So I was already sort of in the zone, say 15 years or so ago. I don't know if I really succeeded in doing that, but it was something I was trying to do. And I was very taken by the language of his work, which I think at first is not apparent. But as you spend time with it, you start to see relationships between the numbers that he uses and the patterns and the lines. And the work for an initiated viewer is, I think, understandable without the need to reference any literature surrounding the work. And that's something that very, very much interests me, that when people come into the show, they don't need any information and they can just engage with the work. Some works are opaque, some works I think are engaging for the lay viewer as much as the initiated viewer. So some of the work dates, of my work, dates back about 10 years. So working with pattern form was something that's just part of my practice. My process is sort of working in a vacuum. I go into the studio and often I don't know what I'm doing. Ideas emerge out of the process. Or I might discover a small idea and then think about how I can exaggerate that. So I was making some small wire grids at some point, and then an opportunity came at the Centre of Contemporary Art in Christchurch to really expand those grids. And so I take those opportunities to exaggerate and to test the limits of a particular pattern or form.
Hmm.
So one idea just seems to naturally lead to another.
Totally. And yeah, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but you work across mediums, having explored sculpture, drawing, painting, printmaking, and installation within your practice. You are primarily a sculptor, and the show is exhibiting solely your sculptural and installation practice. Was that a conscious choice in relation to Griffa's work in the space?
It was a conscious choice by the curator.
Right.
I think from the outset, it was Griffa has the walls and you have the floor.
Nice. And I feel like, you know, with that, with pairing the two of you, there's quite a beautiful cultural exchange element to this exhibition, where you're making from the perspective of a Māori worldview and Griffa from his Western Italian background. How do you kind of see the two interrelate and contrast in the show?
Well, I think there's some very obvious connections in terms of the spiral and the kuru.
Mm.
I do actually have an Italian heritage myself.
Oh.
The origins of that heritage are in Piedmont and Lombardy.
Mm.
The family name is Luzzetti, and there's a town right on the outskirts of Turin called Luzzetti.
Oh, wow.
But I think really it's just an interest. We have a common interest in exploring things formally and seeing what permeates or expands from that origin.
Mm. Totally. Maybe this is a question for the gallery staff, but I was wondering whether you could speak to it as well. How did Griffa's work arrive? Because it's installed in these fold creases, which are deliberately visible. Could you speak to that a little?
Okay. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or not, but I'll go ahead. When James showed me his initial design for the show, the first space involved this three small paintings by Griffa. I was a bit shocked by that at first. It's like, oh my goodness, that's going to be a very sparse show. But trusted in the process, and it worked. But I think there are 15 Griffa paintings, and one is very large. It must be 4 meters by 3 meters, something like that.
Mm.
And again, it folds up. And the second shock that I got was seeing the Griffa crate, which would have been about a meter by 250 millimetres by 600 millimetres.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole show fitted in that crate, and it was like, oh my goodness, where are the other works? But of course they fold down. But we opened up the crate, and inside the crate is a smaller box, which is probably 800 by 600 by 100 millimetres.
Wow.
So the whole show, it just compacts into a very small crate, and I'm very envious of that, actually.
Yes, true. Very different to your practice.
Yeah, but I really enjoy those creases in the work. I think they create a nice linkage between my work and his, because it gives the paintings a kind of sculptural quality as well as a painting space.
Mm, I like that a lot. And I understand that you had a number of your students from Elam involved in the exhibition as well, which would be such a cool opportunity. What did that kind of relationship and process look like?
It came fairly last minute in the piece. Probably I put it to James about 3 months ago. I often like to involve my students in my exhibitions if I can. I think as a senior artist, it's my responsibility to create opportunities for young artists, and the students in this show are from Studio One, their first year. They result from a four-week course in sculpture, an introduction, and I'm always astounded at the results, and I'm often more excited by my students' work than work that I see out and around in the galleries. But that's because I have a particular liking for sculpture and abstract sculpture, and that's what I'm teaching.
Yeah.
So it just seemed like a great opportunity, and it's a way of creating excitement for the students to like be working at art school in the abstract, and then to be showing in a public gallery. I think makes it real and makes it exciting for them.
Totally. Which work in the show was that in?
Oh, so you walk into the gallery, and there's the front desk, and then behind the desk is a shelf.
Yeah.
And there are about 12 to 14 works sitting on the shelf. There's also a work sitting on the floor, and there's a work that looks like a matchbox sitting on the counter.
That was artist Peter Robinson speaking to me about differences in kind and rhythm, an exhibition pairing his and Italian painter Giorgio Griffa's work at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery until the 24th of August.
Because we were feeling a little extra, a little cunty.
Karen Montgomery is a craft-based artist working from a background in textiles, interior design, and her innate passion for ecology. Montgomery shows an attentiveness to her ecological surroundings and prides herself as a gardener and observer with always an interest in making. As an observer, Montgomery has drawn close attention to the camellia flower within her current exhibition at Object Space, the Camellia Society. The show presents 10 beautifully detailed, handcrafted replica paper camellias that line the gallery in an ode to a garden, paying close attention to a normally overlooked camellia plant. Karen puts its beauty to the forefront, reminding us of the little nuggets of beauty sitting right in our backyard, inviting viewers to engage with attentiveness and to become observers of the beauty within our own ecological surroundings. I had a korero with Karen about the show and her overall practice. Here it is now.
My name is Karen Montgomery. I'm from Tamaki Makaurau. I have a background in textiles, mostly out of Japan, and always an interest in making. Our botanical world has loomed pretty large in my life as a gardener, as an observer. The plants and trees that surround us and enrich our world and give us joy, though often very ignored, or, you know, we see people out there sort of hacking them down endlessly. So that would really form my interest in what came next.
And your current show at Object Space, the Camellia Society, presents 10 beautifully detailed replica paper camellias that line the gallery in kind of an ode to a garden. I would like to start the conversation about this exhibition by asking about how the specific practice of paper flower making arose. What gravitated you towards it?
Well, of course, COVID, as with many things for us, we were left alone without work and largely at home. I was wandering the streets, as we were all wandering the streets, trying to avoid people. And the gardens are the things that interested me as I wove my way around the area. And the beauty, the absolute beauty that are so, as I said, so often ignored. And then I would pass the local dairy and they were still open and they would have buckets of sort of dying flowers outside, which I thought were utterly exquisite. And people simply, you know, we might go in and think, oh, well, you know, $7.99, we'll buy a bunch of flowers, oh, that's all right, without really noticing the absolute charm of these things that have been around for thousands of years. And they've all but lost their meaning for us, I feel. And they're somewhat reduced to something that's fashionable, something in a bouquet, perhaps on the table, a bunch of flowers, something pretty in a garden, frustrating if it doesn't flower, the trees that need pruning, and so on and so forth. So really, yes. That's how it came about. I sat down with some old crepe paper that I had in my cupboard. I found some wire and I probably, you know, went around the neighbourhood and I clipped a few branches here and there and I started trying to replicate them. I would pull them apart and see what was inside. Really astounding. See what was inside and start by building up in that same way, starting with the inside.
So it really started off as like a scavenging for materials around your house and kind of making do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which I think is so beautiful way to start with, like, what's around my house? What can I make with these materials that are around me?
Yes.
And how has this expanded over the years since that? What, how have your use of materials changed and how have you developed your techniques in order to make them?
Well, quite a lot. I mean, I look back and think, oh, they're rather shameful, really, what I first made. they were very naive, and I've got better and better at it, and somewhat with a sort of an OCD mannerism, I've really refined what I was wanting to do in terms of making botanically correct plants And as I say, you know, starting from the inside and building up, I have now sourced papers from Japan and Italy, various wires, but also using things that I might find at home. You know, I will soak some of the papers and add a little colour from a... be anything. Beetroot is pretty good, actually. Tea and coffee is quite good too, and try to, you know, get my colours coming out through the paper with using those various things. And then it's a trial and error. I tend not to, I don't make patterns. If I have to repeat something, I just go and get another branch or another flower, and I start again. And each one will be very different because of that, as is each flower or plant or branch or whatever. They're always somewhat different. I love the aging process. I don't want simply beautiful flowers. I think that the aging and regeneration is equally as beautiful as the fresh new bloom.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, that was one of my favourite bits about the exhibition, seeing all these like little bits of like wear and tear in the different kinds of colours. It kind of brings it, I don't know, more into like the everyday realm.
Of course, and you then get an idea that, you know, insects have been on the plant, that they've chewed through it in part, and they have a part to play in the whole system as well, as do the magnificent colours. And sometimes the colours are in nature. You know, when you bring them inside and I replicate them and I think, yeah, I've got that right, that colour's right, it pretty well looks unreal. We don't really notice that they can be so vibrant. Perhaps a yellowing leaf it can be bright, bright yellow and whatever, but there we go, they are.
Yeah, and the camellia plant, it was once so prized and now it's kind of a plant that surrounds us in our everyday lives, finding them in our back of our gardens, along the sidewalk, on a stroll around the block, almost fading into the surroundings if you don't take the time to notice its blooming flowers or the fallen petals under our feet. Could you tell me a bit more about why you were drawn to the camellia flower as a subject matter, as well as a bit more about the plant in general and its arrival in Aotearoa, New Zealand?
Well, you're quite right, Maya. That's the reason is just as you've explained. We have them everywhere here. They are prolific, and they are just not noticed. They're not the prized flowers in the bouquet or anything like that. And they generally, you know, people get a little cross as the petals fall onto the footpath. It can be a bit slippery and whatever. And they just are prolific with a magnificent history. They come from China, one of the earliest documented flowers, bushes, hedges. We're looking at, you know, around 30,000 plus years ago in China, and many of the plants that we have around us nowadays do originate from China. They were then followed into Japan very early on, so they have a long history there in Japan as well. And through the 16th and 17th century, they were taken into Europe. When they got to Europe, the weather being what it was, quite different from Asia, they really didn't thrive terribly well. And they were very prized, but to have them in one's garden, you had to have a glass house. And if you had a glass house, it meant that you were quite well-to-do and you had status. So they were sort of rare and prized in that way. And then we don't really know when they first came into New Zealand, probably with seeds, but we're not terribly sure. We haven't. But some of the plants that came in, we know, came with various people coming into the country, and it's noted and documented, but not the camellia. By about 1840, they had become quite prolific because we didn't need a glass house here. They really went quite mad. And camellia societies were starting to pop up through the land. There are still 16 camellia societies in the country today. So they still have, you know, quite a prominence, and there are thousands of cultivars. So they're very prolific now, but still, you know, we walk past every day and we tend not to notice them.
Mm. And what are your intentions through the presentation of this body of work? What do you wish for viewers as they move through the space? What would you like them to experience and take away from it?
Well, first and foremost, I'd like them to be very accessible to everybody, and people can take what they will from it. But really, because they're handmade and they're botanically correct, I think and I'm hoping that people will be drawn to them to look more closely and then to go and look in our gardens and along our streets at these beautiful, beautiful plants that are almost singing out there for us to take notice of them.
Yes.
And by making it by hand, you know, that does draw people in. They say, oh, my goodness, you know, that's actually paper and whatever. So that's what I hope, which is pretty simple, but I think needs to be recognised.
Yeah, draw attention to this little bit of beauty just in our backyards.
Absolutely. There for everybody to see. Not hard to grow. Quite hard to kill.
Yes. Beautiful. Yes.
That was Karen Montgomery speaking to me about her current exhibition, The Camellia Society, on now at Object Space until the 24th of August.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists.
It's paintings in that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tāmaki Makaurau. As mentioned on the show, Ma, an exhibition curated by Yuka Oshinesi, is on at the Arts House Trust at Pa Homestead until the 31st of August.
Also as mentioned on the show, the Camellia Society, an exhibition by Karen Montgomery, is on at Object Space until the 24th of July.
And Peter Robinson and Giorgio Griffith's dialogue exhibition, Differences in Kind and Rhythm, is on now at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery until the 24th of August.
Also as mentioned on the show, Murmuration, an exhibition by Si Rong, is on at Sanderson Contemporary until the 20th of July.
Two exhibitions are on at Season Gallery, Inflation by Gerard Dombrowski and A Log by Tarika Sabawal, both on until the 12th of July.
Welsh artist Sarah Wynne Evans is currently showing at Michael Lett Gallery until the 12th of July.
Tala Oleto, an exhibition by Angela Tiatia and Yuki Kihara, is on at Gus Fisher Gallery until the 30th of August.
Unerased, Made in Palestine, is on at 250 Ponsonby Road until the 12th of July.
Now I'm a Wall, Now a Window is an exhibition by Saskia Leek, on now at Ivan Anthony until the 19th of July. If you have something you want on the Art Guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi kia koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for us on various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us.
Yuka Oshinesi and Anita Tota.
Si Rong.
Peter Robinson.
And Karen Montgomery.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi kia koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com.
Ka hoki mai mātou a te rā wiki. Next up is The Land of the Good Groove with Mari. My name is Sophia.
And I'm Maya.
And that was various artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95BFM. Bye.
Bye, ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.